We now begin the third parak of Maseches Sukkah, and this parak is the one that focuses on the halachas of the arba minim, the four species of vegetation that we take and shake on Sukkahs. The pasuk says, "Ulakachtem lachem biyom harishon," and you'll take for yourselves on the first day, meaning the first day of Sukkahs, the 15th of Tishrei, pri eitz hadar, which is referring to the esrog, kapos tamarim, that's the lulav, va'anaf eitz avos, that's the hadasim, va'arve nachal, those are the aravos. In English, I guess I should translate, pri eitz hadar literally means the fruit of a beautiful fruit from a beautiful tree, one translation, and that's referring to the citron, the esrog, kapos tamarim, which are sort of like fronds of a date palm, referring to the lulav, va'anaf eitz avos, those are like branches of a like a braided tree, if you will, referring to the hadasim, va'arve nachal, these are like willows from a brook, something like that, brook willows, referring to the aravos. Usamachtem lefnei Hashem elokeichem, you'll rejoice before Hashem, shivas yamim, for 7 days. Now, we already pointed out that there's an inconsistency between the beginning of the pasuk, which says ulakachtem lachem biyom rishon, on the first day, and the end of the pasuk, which says v'simachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem shivas yamim, you rejoice for 7 days. I asked that question explained back in the introduction, and here I say it again. The difference is that the midoraisa, there's only a mitzvah on the first day of Sukkot to shake the arba minim, except where you are lifnei Hashem, before Hashem, meaning in the Beis HaMikdash, where the mitzvah is all shivas yamim, all 7 days. Nowadays, we do shake all 7 days. The reason why is because there's a din de Rabbanan, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, in the wake of the Chorban HaMikdash, the destruction of the temple, he decreed that we should shake a lulav all 7 days, as a zeich HaMikdash, to remember what happened in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, there are basically three criteria regarding what makes for kosher minim, and they're all learned out from that very verse. The first criterion is that it says, v'lakachtem lachem. V'lakachtem, you will take for yourselves. You darshan that, like it says, if it says, like a lakicha tama. A tam is like a complete, simple, wholesome taking, meaning that the plant that you're taking cannot be chaser, can't be missing anything. So even if a little bit of the epitome fell off, or whatever the story is, or some other essential parts of the lulav or hadas or esrog fall off, actually any part of the esrog fall off, so then you now don't have a complete plant species, and then it's not kosher. Second of all, it says v'lakachtem lachem, take for yourself. So it has to be yours. That's a second requirement, that it must be specifically owned by you, the one who's doing the shaking. And then third of all, it says pri eitz hadar, referring to the esrog being the beautiful fruit, but there's a hekesh which connects that to the other three species, so they all four must be hadar, they must all be a beautiful fruit, and if they lack hiddur, if they're ugly for whatever reasons, there'll be some objective criteria set forth here, it's also not going to be acceptable and you won't be yotzi. So those three requirements, that they should be not lacking anything, complete, yours, and beautiful, apply on the first day of Sukkot, when it's a Doraisa. When it comes to Durabanan, the rules are relaxed, and no longer does it need to be yours. No longer does it need to be even, it can be chaser, it can be lacking something. You bite off your pitom, and your esrog is still kosher on the second, third, fourth days of, etc. of Sukkot. As far as the hiddur requirement, Tosfos understands that that is still in effect all 7 days, and that's certainly how B'nai Ashkenaz go. The Rambam seems to be lenient. But be that as it may, so that's what we're looking for in these arba minim. Now, the first Mishnah here, we'll talk about the lulav, the palm branch, and it says, lulav ha-gazul v'ha-yavesh pasal. If you have a lulav, which has either been stolen, gazul, stolen, or yavesh, dried out, it's pasal, it's not valid for shaking. The lulav ha-gazul, the stolen lulav, is actually invalid for two separate reasons. The first is that if it's stolen, it's not yours, and therefore you can't shake it. But second of all, even if it did become yours, there's a discussion, which I want to get into right now, about if the original owner gave up hope of finding it, and now you've come to own it, perhaps. It doesn't matter. It's still going to be invalid because of the principle, that overarching principle that applies beyond the scope of Arba Minim, of what's called as mitzvah haba b'aveira, when you're only able to fulfill a mitzvah through having done some aveira, some crime, so then you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. And that's in the case here, if you're the thief, so then even if you've come to own it, it's still unacceptable. And that being the case, there are actually some differences, of course, if you're the thief versus someone else the thief, and also if it's a stolen lulav, which is a problem on the first day as far as the ownership goes. But if it's hababa avera, it was acquired through some crime, then that would be a permanent blemish on the lulav that would apply for all 7 days. As far as yavish goes, that means dried out. So there's actually machlokas of how dry we're talking about, and actually, interestingly enough, on what parts are dried out. Tosos very leniently says it's so dried out that if you take your fingernail, like it crumbles when you touch it. The Ravid says that's inconceivable. We've seen lulavim that are really old, that are, you know, from previous sukkahs, and they're not that brittle. They crumble apart. Therefore, the Ravid says that if your lulav has got all the green has been, you know, left it, that's when it's called yavish. And the Shulchan Aruch goes like the Ravid, so it's once it's got the green has all left it, at that point it's considered to be yavish. Although the Ramah does say that if you're in a present situation where you haven't got any lulavim, so if your lulav isn't dried out to the point of Tosfos's dryness, so then you can still use it and be yotzi. As far as what is being dried out, so it would be true, it's invalid if either it's the majority of the leaves are drying out, the alim, or if the shidra, the spine, is totally dried out. And in fact, I should speak out here, the basic anatomy of a lulav, you have to understand, there are two or three distinct halachic parts to lulav. There's the shidra, the spine, that's the main thick, like, branch in the middle, if you will, off of which the leaves are coming out. Those leaves off the side are called the alim, the leaves. Each of the leaves are doubled up. If you know what I mean. They're like a double leaf that's attached on one edge, and you can actually kind of peel them apart into two if you want to. The very top central leaf, the leaf that's coming out of the middle of the top of the shidra of that spine, is called the tiomes, according to how Ashkenaz understand what a tiomis is. And that being the case, that is a special halachic status all to itself. That top, central, middle, double leaf is called the tiomis, where tiomis means doubled. Other mefarshim understand that each leaf is a tiomis in as much as it's like a double leaf. Okay? So up to now, what I'm saying is that it's yavish if either the majority of the leaves or the spine are dried out, ravid, there's no green left, tosos so much that it crumbles. Okay. And Shulchan Aruch goes like the ravid, so more strict. The Mishnah continues and says, "Shel Asherah v'shel Irhani Dachas Pasul." If we're talking about a lulav that is from an Asherah tree or an Irhani Dachas, a wayward city, it's Pasul. What this is talking about are two cases where there's a requirement to burn this lulav. An Asherah is a tree that was worshipped in Avodah Zarah. For technical reasons, we're talking about a Jewish-owned tree that was served. But anyways, even if it was a non-Jewish palm tree that was used in Avodah Zarah, it's still being appropriate to use for the mitzvah, but for whatever technical reasons, it's supposed to be a Jewish tree that was used in Asherah, has to be burned. And similarly, Irhani Dachas, that's a city that was a city of a Jewish city where the majority of the inhabitants were turned to idolatry. There are a number of specific criteria to be an official Irhani Dachas, which I don't want to get into now, but the point is, if the city is confirmed to be an Irhani Dachas, so then everyone who did the idolatry and served is killed, and all of the possessions of the city are piled up in the town square and burned. So again, the point is, if there was a lulav there, technically, again, it's a lulav that was detached from the ground, not a palm tree, because that would be exempt for whatever technical reasons. But the point is, a lulav that was in Irhani Dachas, or a lulav from a tree that was worshipped, has to be burned. And the basic principle is that if it's got to be burned, then sort of like kol ha'omed lisaref kasaref dami, if it has to be burned, it's as if it were already burned. And the point is, therefore, that we say halachically, this lulav no longer has the requisite shear. It's not got the requisite size to use a lulav because it's as good as burned already. Okay, those are those two things. Those psulim over there. Next, it says niktam rosho. If its top has been lopped off, it's going to be pasul. What the top is referring to is a machlokas also. According to the Rosh, which is how the Shulchan Aruch goes, what we're talking about here is the top leaves, meaning the leaves that extend above the spine. If the majority of those leaves have been cut off, then the lulav is pasul. And that's the Rosh, and that is the halacha. There are those who understand that the Rosh referring here is actually specifically the tiomas, the very tippy top leaf, like the Gra says that, and others as well. And fine, so that's that. But anyways, the halacha is, and the Gra is machmer, so that means even if a little tiny tip has been cut off, so then you would have not be having a kosher lulav if the tiny tip of your tiomas was chopped off. Nifritzu alav. That means, according to the Bar Tzenura, who learns like Rashi, it means that the leaves themselves were broken off. They were like ripped off of the shidra, off the spine, and then sort of reattached on like a broom. And the Gemara describes it as looking like a broom. Hence, the description is like, hey, to make like sort of a thatched broom, you have a bunch of twigs and you attach them at the bottom. These are all the leaves that are ripped off and then sort of reattached together, making it puzzle. Others learn that Nifritz, who doesn't have to mean totally ripped off, like the Rambam and Riff learn, it means it's sort of dangling, and that's how the Shulchan Aruch says. Tos understands it looks like a broom because you've taken each of the double leaves and sort of peeled them in half, sort of making like sort of like frizzy hair. You like sort of frizzed out the leaves, making it look kind of like a broom. I don't think anyone would use any of those kind of lulavim today, sort of on starter, but whatever. Those are all not that. Those all things are not kosher as nifritzu, the torn lulav. Nifridu alav. Now, lipared means to separate. So if the leaves have begun to separate, because remember, what does a palm tree look like? When the palm, the lulav opens up, it becomes like a frond, like a kind of hand-shaped thing. So it starts out being together, like you know what a lulav looks like, and then it opens up. So nifridu is it starts to open up. We're saying if nifridu alav, it's kosher. It's okay if it starts to open up. Rabbi Yehuda omer yagdenul milamala. Rabbi Yehuda says you'll have to sort of tie him back down again. We'll agree, all the shittos agree, that if it's opened up and hardened and it's like sort of looks like a big open hand, locked in place like wood, forget it, no longer kosher. But if it just begins to start separating, but like if you put it aside, it flops down again, whatever it is, that's going to be kosher and that's going to be fine. And the halacha is not like Rabbi Huda, so no need to even tie it down if that would happen, if it begins to open up. Although I've personally never seen anyone shake a lulav that's begun to open up. Okay, Sini Hara Barzel, that means like palm trees that grew on this place called Hara Barzel. They had quite sparse leaves, and that being the case, there wasn't a lot of coverage of the leaves over the shidra. Still ksheros, those are kosher for lulavim as well, provided that the tip of the bottom leaf covers the base of the next leaf. They're at least that dense. If it's less than that, too sparse and not kosher. And finally, lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tfachim kadei lananeya bo kosher. A lulav has to have three tfachim and enough to shake it, do the nanuim to shake in order to be kosher. The Gemara understands there are missing words here. What we mean is there's three plus one more tefach to do the nanuim, to do the shaking. That extra tefach is an extra tefach that will go above and beyond the height of the hadasim and aravos, which are each three tefachim. So that means, tachlis, that means that your lulav has to be four tefachim long. And there's a machlokas if we're talking about the shidra, the spine being four tefachim, or the whole thing being four tefachim. L'maisa, we're machmir that even the shidra should be four tefachim long, and that means that the shidra extends one tefach above the end where the hadasim and aravos go. And there are those who say that if you have a very long hadasim and aravos, you need a tefach longer yet, lulav, to make it work. And that, of course, is how one should do it. One should do it that he sets up his lulav, that the lulav shidra extends one tefach beyond the hadasim and aravos, where it's all bound together, and then he has what to shake with, his... that we'll call that the four tefach plus long lulav.